It may be one of the most notorious murder cases of the past 10 years in America. A disgraced attorney, Alex Murdaugh, prominent South Carolina family, murders his wife and his 22-year-old son. Multiple gunshot wounds, brutal murder, near the dog kennels of his family's estate back in 2021. It took a South Carolina jury only 3 hours to convict him of murder. He's now serving two life sentences. But now his attorneys are bringing forward a petition for a new trial, claiming that a county clerk of the court tampered with the jury on a number of fronts. And, of course, they've been making the rounds of the morning TV shows, pleading their case. Let's have a reality check here to see if the prospect of a new trial is real or overstated by his attorneys and whether this is just a Hail Mary that's going to go nowhere. We welcome in attorney and managing partner at Flood Law, Todd Flood, veteran criminal defense attorney and prosecutor. Todd, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Guy. How are you?
Good. And I think a lot of folks are captivated by this new development. The allegation is that this woman named Rebecca Hill, who apparently was writing a very poorly scripted book and self-publishing it during the trial, somehow was putting pressure on the jury to reach a quick guilty verdict, they claim, misrepresenting evidence, and also advised them not to believe Murdaugh's testimony. What do you make of this?
It's a serious allegation. I've had situations in the past. We've seen situations here in Detroit in the past where there has been outside influences. We can go back to the Malice Green case where there was inadvertently a movie played where Rodney King's beating took place when the jury was sequestered and we had a mistrial. You look at it as though if there was any outside influence, it's presumptively prejudicial towards the defense. So when you have affidavits where jurors said, yes, this clerk told me not to believe anything of the defense or be, you know, something on the eye or lookout for whatever the defense wants, or you're not taking a cigarette break until you come back with a verdict. Those are really infringing upon the Sixth Amendment, that fair and impartial trial. So there's going to be a hearing, right? And we'll ferret out the truth and find out whether or not there was, in fact, any influence upon the jury. And again, that's a pretty high burden to overcome, that it wasn't prejudicial if, in fact, there is establishment of outside influence.
So
that's crazy.
Does this trouble you at all that this comes 6 months after the conviction, that these jurors now, and there are apparently three of them have made the allegations, but two of them have actually sworn affidavits saying that there were improper discussions during deliberations? But does it diminish the credibility of their claim that they waited 6 months and didn't say a doggone thing until after this woman published her book?
Well, here's the thing. So 6 months after, how do you find out whether or not a juror was in fact influenced in the case if you're the defense attorney? Your verdict comes in, you pull the jury in front of the judge, they all go on their merry way, and then what do? You look up and contact the jurors. So there's some question, maybe some investigation that takes place, then you have to do some work, you then have to talk to the juror, sit them down. Jurors don't want to talk to the lawyers afterwards, right? So it's a process to get to a juror after a trial. And, at their home, by their telephone number. You don't get their telephone number as a lawyer.
Yeah.
So what do you do? So, yeah, you got to work, and the work takes some time. So six months is not 3 years. It takes some time. I think the bigger question is, to me, where's this clerk, and put this clerk under oath relatively quickly, right? And where's law enforcement to make sure that this did or didn't happen? Get the jurors. You're going to have, and the jurors are not, it's not going to be an open court. In Michigan, we would have them sequestered a juror. Mm-hmm. We'd bring them in with a court reporter. The judge would be there. The prosecutor would be there. The defense attorney would be there. And the judge would have this inquiry as it related to the questions that are being presented. That's in the state of Michigan. I had it once where a juror in a murder trial, the murder trial that I was defending, one of the jurors went out to the scene and had a prayer vigil with other jurors, unbeknownst to me, unbeknownst to any of us. And then from there, we got a mistrial, but we did it, you know, ultimately and got a not guilty thereafter. But it's hard work first to figure out if there was tampering. How did you get wind of the tampering?
Right.
And the like. So I'm not too surprised by the 6 months.
Okay. So let's assume that she did make some random statements to jurors over the course of this long trial when they were being sequestered. You know, don't be fooled by his body language, something like that. And let's say that's confirmed. How high is the bar to get a new trial? Would that in and of itself be enough?
So the United States Supreme Court, in a case, Renan, has pretty much said that once you have determined, you know, that there's been basically this intrusion into the jury, that 12-person panel, once you've figured that out, then the next step is the government has to show that it wasn't prejudicial. It's presumed to be prejudicial. It's presumed to have that bar for the defense. Government, you show us why it's not prejudicial. That's the United States Supreme Court's decision. So it's a very significant bar for the government to overcome. There are other ways where the defense, it shifts to the burden of the defense, but not in this way, not in this fact pattern, because the fact pattern here is you have someone making offhanded comments to influence a jury. It happens, you know, inadvertently. Two lawyers can be talking about the case, and if you're in the jury pool, the judge will tell you, hey, listen, don't listen. Don't come around other attorneys, police officers. They're going to walk the other way. They're not disrespecting you, but they need to stay away from you. You'll get that instruction.
Very quickly, Todd, it's not jury tampering, but they're also alleging that they weren't allowed smoke breaks. That they got smoke breaks during the trial, not during deliberations. Is that going to hold much water? I'm not a smoker, so I tend to be a little jaded when it comes to that. But is that a viable is that a form of jury coercion?
No, not necessarily. Unless there was, hey, listen, you don't get a cigarette break, guy, until you come back with a verdict. Pressuring you to come back with a verdict is an influence.
Okay.
Forcing you. You stay in there, you're not going to be able to go to the bathroom. You're not going to have a cigarette. You're not going to have a lunch break. Forcing those, that is not necessarily jury tampering. That's something different.
So denying the smoke break, that's not so much, but saying it might be. Todd, thanks very much.